just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air with performance number 652. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm going to be joined today by my co-host, Ms. Nicole Shiro. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming this puppy live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on offstage and on the air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. On the show today, we're going to be talking to Sharon Anderson of ATX Theater. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, St. Louis, and San Francisco. Stick with us. Let's go fly a kite, Nicole.
That just made me so happy. I was dancing here in my living room and singing. I haven't heard that song in a while. I'm sorry there was no video for our listeners, but
there was no video, but that is actually from the original London West End cast of the Broadway or the West End Mary Poppins. So there would be
Mary
no video.
No, yep. I'm talking about video of me dancing in my living room enjoying Let's Go Fly Kite.
That's true. Well, before we talk about this song and everything, I'm going to run off the top of the bat. Thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. This one was a little creepy. Being evidently, I did not know this, you probably did, that it is Edgar Allan Poe's birthday.
It's a lot of crazy birthdays. Today's Dolly Parton's too. Who knew?
Dolly Parton or Valerie Bertinelli? What did you say?
Dolly Parton. There's just some wild birthdays today.
That's wild. Who could imagine that Dolly Parton would have a birthday?
No, but I'm just saying, Edgar Allan Poe. It's also LeVar Burton, if you want to.
Well, there you go.
Crazy birthday day.
The one who should be hosting
Jeopardy.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I played that song. Because
it's going to be in my head all day and I'm going to be like swishing around my living room.
it's going to swish, but it is in honor of Everett Astor Lee, who passed away today. And he wrote much of the music from Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I do love the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yep. And others, he's also I've got to pull up my thing, which I was a little late to the game today. I was minding my own business here in the studio, and all of a sudden it was time to start the show, and I didn't even know it.
Yes, all of a sudden you called me, and we normally say hello, and no. You called, and I went right to Let's Go Fly a Kite, and I was like, well, hello there.
Didn't. So he died at 105. He was the very first African American conductor to conduct on Broadway, and he did the 1945 production of Leonard Bernstein's On the Town.
Oh, no way!
Yep, yeah. No way.
I like that.
away, and he passed away. He lived in Malmo, Sweden.
I didn't know there was a Malmo, Sweden. That's a new one for me.
I did not either. So so there you go. That's that is in honor of Everett
Astorly. And I don't know any Swedish to come back and say yes or no. I feel bad right now.
I don't know, but he's a quite a handsome man, I have to say.
Hmm.
I have to say that.
Well, hats off to him. I enjoy the Let's Go Fly a Kite and the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and a lot of others. So
all of them. I was also very surprised to learn earlier in the week that Terry Teachout died at age 65.
That one was late at night. I was in bed and I happened to go on and I was like, no, it was, that one got me, man.
Yeah. So Terry Teachout was a critic. Mostly of late with Washington Post. And he was a critic that did not...
He was an author, too. I mean, he's done
a lot. Oh, he was everything.
He's
probably most well-known as a critic. And he was one of the critics, one of the very few critics that didn't just do the big-named stuff. He would be often found out in the regions watching and reviewing... smaller shows that are not in there. He was also with the National Review. And he, along with, oh my God, what's her name? Vincencelli and, oh, I forgot his name. Anyway, had a monthly podcast, which just ended, hosted by the American Theater Magazine, called Three on the Isle. Did you ever listen to that?
Yes. I adore Terry Teachout. He was always... on social media, he was so opening. He was just a, you know, you see his byline photo of him and the big smile, and that just really encompassed Terry Teachout as a person. He suffered a lot of loss and heartache and still was a joy, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, really bummer. He was young. He was 65. Mm-hmm. He lived in Kansas City, Missouri. Where he worked for Harper's Magazine. He also wrote a book called All the Dances, A Brief Life of George Balanchine.
Yes. Yes, he did.
He did that in 2004. A book called A Terry Teachout Reader in 2004 also. A book called The Skeptic, A Life of H.L. Mencken in 2002. And City Limits, Memories of a Small Town Boy in 1991.
Yeah, he was an interesting man.
Yeah, he was also a well-known Louis Armstrong aficionado.
I did know that. I think when he was still writing at the Times a lot, he wrote a lot about that.
Yeah.
He was a hardware salesman at one point. I remember him talking about his hardware. He was an interesting individual, Lisa.
He was. He was indeed.
A man of many trades and many faces and just a good soul.
Yeah. And here it says in his Wikipedia page, it says he died of congestive heart failure, which wasn't initially said in his first obituary that I read. So he will be missed. And I did enjoy, I'm surprised you didn't listen to Three on the Isle.
I listened to it here and there. I start listening to things and then my little ADD brain gets sidetracked all the time sometimes if I don't listen to things live.
Oh.
That's my problem. The on demand is not always conducive for Nicole.
True. He was born in Cape Girardeau, Louisiana, Missouri, a city that I played when I worked with the Joffrey Ballet.
I did not know there was a Cape Girardeau. So the things I just learned today.
Now you do. Now you know. Now you win. Now you win it. I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I'm in it to win it all the time with you, Lisa Sheff.
In it to win it. So those were two unfortunate losses. Well, at 105, I'm going to say he done good. At 65, that's too young.
Yeah, I concur.
And tonight at 7:45, the lights of Broadway will dim for Sidney Poitier.
Yes.
Which I think is it's a great honor because he was not known, and nor did he do a whole bunch of theater. His roots, of course, are in theater, and he's known for Raisin in the Sun on Broadway and in the film. But he only did 4 Broadway shows. But so I think it's wonderful that they are honoring him as one of our own.
His legacy is just his work, and his legacy is just the catalog of what he's done and who he is as an actor and performer is just too large to not look and honor. I mean, I don't know. I get it.
Agreed.
I'm for it.
Agreed. Me too. And I think it's good. So that's happening at 7:45 tonight.
Handsome devil, that Sidney Poitier. Another handsome devil.
Well, now he's a handsome angel.
Yes. He could be a devilish angel. I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So, well, let's, that will just, that sort of bookends our, not bookends, it sort of comes to a full circle with International Folk Bazaar and his macabre music focusing on Edgar Allan Poe. We will now go in the opposite direction. And I have been hearing about this for several weeks, and I finally looked it up and looked at it. Did you know about this Winnie the Pooh musical that was playing off Broadway? It just closed.
I was going to say the one that just closed, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, tell me, what were you going to say about it?
Well, I just said it looks interesting. It's all done with puppetry. Well, all the animals are. It's very, Christopher Robin is, an actual human person. It's made for kids. So, and not having seen the whole thing, I don't know whether it's, you know, I have an issue with, theater for children that doesn't have some like stuff in there that
stuff
adults will
adults.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
I will. I'm pointing at you. I'm looking at you. Beauty and the Beast. You are guilty of this. There's nothing in Beauty and the Beast that I enjoy at all. Other than those beautiful costumes and that beautiful set.
You Gaston makes me laugh.
What makes you laugh?
Gaston.
Oh, yeah, kind of, but it
Pooh,
looks cute. But I
love Pooh.
Me too. And I have to. I will admit to you, and I'm not going to tell anybody else this, and only because you and I are friends and we go years back. But my mom called me Ricky Pooh.
Oh, that makes me.
I
so
grew up. I grew up as Pooh Bear.
Okay. Well. The last trip I was on in New York in November 2019, before when I went to see the Little Shop and the Tina and the Hades
Little Shop, Little Shop of Tina, bop, shoo, bop.
I went and had lunch with a good friend of mine, Ben, and we went into the big central library, you know, the one you see in Ghostbusters.
Yes,
the
big
one.
Oh, never mind.
But we went in there specifically because they had an A.A. Milne, whatchamacallit, like museum display going on. Oh my gosh, I cannot think of the word right now. Exhibition, hello, up in the children's section of the library. And we went in, and all the original toys that he had that inspired all of the characters in Winnie the Pooh were there on display, Lisa. And I was losing my mind. I took pictures galore.
Well, you know, it just dawned on me. I never know, you know, when I think of the Winnie the Pooh things that I saw on TV growing up, I never knew who voiced Winnie the Pooh.
Who did? Do you know?
Because I literally just looked it up. Jim Cummings voiced Winnie the Pooh.
Oh. The whole time?
Well, I don't know. He's still alive. I'm not going
to
take the time to read it, but
he
also voiced...
I'm gonna have to look down.
Tigger, King Louie, Darkwing Duck, Taz. I don't know who Taz is, and Pete.
I don't know, but you know the wonderful things about Tiggers is that I'm the only one.
There's only. Yeah, we love Tiggers. We love Pooh. I'm a big fan.
We love Pooh. Me too. This just wore my day, but I did see that it closed, and I was like, the puppets. I'm fascinated by this. Someone bring me Pooh. I want to save it somewhere.
Who doesn't like poo? that just sounds wrong. but I'm talking about Winnie the.
Winnie the.
So did you happen to see last night great performances?
No, and it wasn't at the documentary because I'm really kind of mad at myself, but I'm going to have to look back on the re-airing or go online and check it out.
Yeah, it's called a Reopening of Broadway, the Broadway Revival, and it is a documentary about the reopening of Broadway, which happened last summer. And it was very poignant at the very, very beginning. There was, right as it started, there was text over that said, this documentary is made about the reopening of Broadway after the pandemic. It is not indicative of our current situation.
Which kills
me.
Which was a shot to the heart, as Bon Jovi likes to say.
Yeah. So that being said, it had lovely interviews with a whole bunch of people and showed the first day of rehearsals for Waitress, which was amazing. And they spent a lot of time with Sarah Bareilles, Adrian Warren, and what's his name, who was played Jafar in Aladdin. I don't know his name.
He's got the three names.
Yeah, he's got the three names, but it's not Brandon Alan Dixon.
No. And he's about to go into another show. He's about to go into Chicago, I think. James?
No, Brandon Alan Dixon's about to go into Chicago, I think.
No, I think this one is too. James Scott.
Hello.
Is that it?
Michael James. Yes, I'm looking at it. Michael James Scott.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, I knew there was a James. We had a James.
But it was a really wonderful documentary to watch. Those were the three main. I forgot her name. The woman who played Diana in Diana the Musical. It followed those four people specifically, but it also had Christian Chenoweth. It had the person who's currently playing the pilot in Come From Away. And they talked about that Come From Away opening night, which was, I believe, the first one to open after.
I think it was. Yeah. I think you're all correct.
And it had the 10-minute standing ovation at the very beginning just to start it. It was very interesting. But what was poignant, so it goes through the whole thing from first rehearsal, and these rehearsals were just amazing to watch because these were these people that are coming together that hadn't been in a theater in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well worth watching if you TiVo'd it, watch it. But it goes all the way to the end. And I did not realize this, that Aladdin had its opening night or reopening night and then immediately closed the next day because of a positive. And they did not find out until half hour that they were not going on that night. And Michael James Scott had flown his entire family in for it.
Yes.
And they did not get to see him perform on Broadway.
That's a kerfuffle.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It is a kerfuffle.
Yes, I knew all that, and it made me sad. I believe it re-airs one or two more times, but I went and looked online, and it's available till the 15th of February.
Yeah, well, it's
to still view. So I will check it out. But I have to go on and check out the PBS schedule because the Austin City Limits Duran Duran episode that Nicole was a part of is airing this weekend.
Oh my God,
so I am all about the PBS this weekend. You can see a masked little Nicole was screaming underneath her mask like a teenage girl watching Duran Duran. That happened Saturday.
I believe you mentioned that last week as well. But one last thing, and this is something that the images are haunting, and I hadn't seen them since March of 2020, but they showed video of Broadway at the height of the pandemic after the close down, and
this is silence.
There's maybe one car would pass, nobody on the sidewalks, but all the marquees were lit up, and they had
and
all
just glare. It's a juxtaposition.
It really is, and really poignant. And I don't know if it's morbid or not, but I wish I was there to experience that a little bit because hopefully we'll never see it again.
Yeah, right? I'm going to knock on some wood and toast all at the same time.
But I would definitely check that. Oh, Lord Weber was featured as well in it. What I thought was interesting on the opening night of Phantom, when they reopened Phantom, is everybody had to wear a mask, of course, but they were also given a Phantom mask. So you had this audience with, like, Phantom masks on.
I mean, let's just talk about, as a marketer, I would have been dying. I mean, when is the moment that you get to hand out Phantom masks to people? If this wasn't the most opportune time and the smartest thing ever, like, I don't know. Lord Weber he's gained a few little points in my book lately.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say that I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, he gave me the superstar, so I will always thank him and Tim Rice for that, period, the end. But he's gained some points for me. I'm like, okay, all right, you go, buddy.
Me? Yep. Yep, yep, yep. So there's a slew of closings, among them Tina Turner, the Tina Turner musical, and Girl from the North.
So good. I would go back and see that right away if you told me I could pick one show right now, even with all the other shows. It's just so good. It would fill my soul, Lisa.
Well, it looks good. And, of course, the Great Performances piece featured Adrian Warren, so we got to see a lot of Tina Turner, the musical. She's so charming. What a lovely... So, I would like to know her.
I would like to know her, too.
Yeah.
Maybe one day, I'm going to start manifesting it. One day we're going to have Adrian Warren on offstage and on the air. I'm just saying it. You heard it here now, today,
that,
January 19th.
That would be lovely. Well, so Girl from the North Country joined... Mrs. Doubtfire and, oh my God, what's the play with Boo Radley and...
Oh, To Kill a Mockingbird?
To Kill a Mockingbird, thank you. Joins those three in putting in a hiatus.
Closing for a while.
Yep, closing for a while. And I honestly think it's kind of rolling the dice. And seeing if they will be able to open again when they want to.
It was interesting when you and I were talking about this last week, Mrs. Doubtfire, and it was like almost instantaneously when we got off air. I don't know if you started seeing all the articles talking to people in it and how this is a bad thing, and then producers coming back and explaining why they're doing it. And it's been this, like, I don't want to say a war, because it hasn't been a war, but it's just been these different articles on both sides that no one's talking to each other. They just keep writing all these articles, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
Have you seen all that?
Well, yeah. So I believe, and don't write me if I'm wrong about this, I'm pretty sure that Mrs. Doubtfire is retaining its theater, whereas Girl from the North Country and To Kill a Mockingbird are not.
And that's a big, that is a big roll of the dice.
Well, it's a big roll of the dice, and yet, and this is something I was going to talk about a little later, but after this weekend, only 19 of the 42 Broadway theaters will have shows in them.
Yes, I mean, it's right now your odds and chances are good, but it's still a roll of the dice.
Yeah, well, I think the whole thing is a roll of the dice. But
yeah,
I know.
We're in interesting times, I guess, you know.
We are.
I guess you just... Why not try something new? I don't know. This is very interesting.
Well, now, if you talk to the producers, their idea is, okay, we could sputter on for a few weeks and then close permanently, or we can shut down now, stop
and wait
paying
for when
everybody,
the people are coming,
and mm-hmm. then wait and come back and hopefully come back stronger. So it's a gamble either way. Although I think if they, you know, according to them, you know, if they stayed playing, then it's not a gamble. It's just that they're going to play for a few weeks and close.
And play for a week and close. So, I mean, this is the solution. I don't know.
Choice. You know what the solution is? I'll tell you what the solution is.
Tell me.
Non-fungible tokens.
Oh, there you go. You figured it all out.
So... Non-fungible tokens, which I don't particularly understand completely. I don't get why they're a thing, but I don't 100% understand what they are, but there's going to be the first non-fungible token musical called The Wrong Man. I believe it's playing
now.
Yeah,
I get it, but I don't get it either, Lisa. I'm in the same page with you. Like, it all makes sense, but yet I'm like, yeah, you've lost me. So I just,
but if you're interested in getting one of these non-fungible tokens for The Wrong Man, they're going to be available sometime this quarter. It says the first quarter of 2022, which, of course, we are in. And this is a musical that will have a premiere in 2023. And it's called The Wrong Man, which looks really interesting. It's about a wrongly accused prisoner. And I guess the work to get him out. And I believe it's off Broadway now. I don't know. But I have to say, and this isn't really theater related, but tangentially, but when we're talking about NFTs and non-fungible tokens, I did just watch the entire COVID and post-COVID South Parks.
Have you watched any of these?
I've watched all three of them. You learn that, and this is a spoiler, so if you don't want to hear this, close your ears. Butters in the future sells non-fungible tokens and destroys the world.
Now that you just said that, all besides singing Let's Go Fly a Kite, I'm going to have to stop in the middle and be like, 6 feet, 6 feet.
6 feet?
Of course, in the first South Park, when he's like the 6 feet. Never mind.
I don't know that one, but I'm with you. I'm with you.
You said you watched all the COVID specials, the South Park specials.
Yeah, there was nothing about 6 feet in it.
Yeah, there was. Very first one was all homeboy with his ruler running around going 6 feet, yelling at everybody. It was hilarious.
Oh, I missed that part. we did have for our last... Oh, no, we're going to take a break. No, you know what? We have to talk about this before we take the break because we're going to play music from it. And it is... No, we aren't. We're gonna play. Let me ask you this: do you know a show called The Happy Time?
Oh, I do.
Well, you should it's written by Kander and Ebb.
Yeah, I was about to say we did a song from this in the Kander and Ebb Cabaret I did with Nicole Morosis at your first theater.
Which song did you do?
Oh my gosh, I can't remember.
Is it The Happy Time? No. Is it Tomorrow Morning, I mean?
It might have been Tomorrow Morning or Happy Time. I believe it was one of the gentlemen we had sing one of the songs.
Happy Time is the name of the show. The song was Tomorrow Morning, but that's what we're going to play. But Happy Time played in 1968. It didn't do very good. It was directed and choreographed by Gower Champion, who won a Tony for both. What's his name? Oh, come on, Lisa, you can do it. Robert Goulet was in it.
The music in it is just delightful. It's one of those that you're like, what? I feel like Liza used to sing a lot of little songs from here.
Well, it was the very first Broadway musical to lose $1 million. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad.
I don't know if that's... there's a good song about being the life of the party in here.
Anyway,
I know that you're playing something from The Happy Time.
And that's what we're going to do. We're going to go to break with this, and we'll go to break, and we will come right back. So sit back and listen to Tomorrow Morning from The Happy Time. You'll hear a little bit of Robert Goulet. Here it is.
Oh, tomorrow morning, the sun will shine with a bud.
Good afternoon, Austin. Here's the headline for today.
And we're the cast of Newsies, and
you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM.
Hornsby, Austin.
Ooh, we're dancers.
Oh yeah.
That's KOP Hornsby, Austin. Newsies the musical.
Now, did you pick them on purpose? Because today there was an announcement on Newsies. Did you see it?
No, I didn't. Do tell.
They put Newsies into the Music Theater International catalog for rights now. It hasn't been available.
Oh. Well, there you go. We learned something there. It was also a clue in yesterday's New York Times crossword puzzle.
Phenomenal.
And I'm very embarrassed how long it took me to solve that clue. It took a long time. Mainly because I had it.
When I saw the thing earlier, I thought of you. So it's kind of funny how Newsies equals Lisa.
See? Yeah, so we had Newsies. All right, well, let's continue our chat. One of the things that I have never... So we talked a long time when we came back that the Broadway League had decided not to announce grosses for individual shows, but they have been putting a... oh my God, I forgot the word. But they put them all together, and they do show those grosses.
A total.
Yeah, there's a word that I was.
Conglomerate of
something
numbers.
Like that, but I'm not going to worry about it. But I finally looked at it, and it's actually a pretty interesting web page. And there will be a link at offstageonair.com, so you can look at it. And it shows the weekly totals, and it does it in a form format. So it has the week ending. It says the grosses, whether it's up or down. It says attendance, whether that's up or down. There's a capacity note. How many performances and whether that's up or down from the previous week, and the number of shows. So for the week ending January 16th, the grosses combined, aggregate, I believe is the word I was trying to come up with, is roughly okay. $19 million out of an attendance of 162,000. Both of those were up from the previous week. Which represents about 67% capacity. There were 196 performances and 25 shows. Now, so realize that next week that 25 is going to go down to 19.
Mm-hmm. So here's what's cool. It's interesting, but it also is you can't really get a full picture unless you really go back and look at every week, because you could go up or down and see these numbers and see the difference from the week, but... How many shows were running? What was happening?
Yeah, that's what this chart says, which is really great. But here's something interesting. So this same week is lower than it's ever been. So traditionally, January is a very slow time on Broadway. There's always a dip in January, but it has not been this bad since the musician strike in 2003, which I find interesting.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, whoa.
So something to compare it to would be in December, when they were playing at 85% capacity. There were 31 shows running, and we were feeling pretty good back then.
Well, at the top of December, because by the end of December, that was not the case.
Right. I'm saying December 19th is what I'm talking about. So the middle of December.
Oh, yeah. That was like 2 days later that all changed.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I'm going to start looking at that every week now, because you don't know how individual shows are doing. So you can't come down and say, oh, well, this show is just hanging on by a thread. But it gives you an idea of the health of the industry. And I do like that, I think.
Yeah, but it's still hard, like, even though you know what you were up or down from the week in front or behind, that doesn't give you a big picture of are you up or down in general for the season, for the quarter. Like, you have to go back and keep looking at each week.
Well, which is the same as it was before.
Kind of, but you could be up a week and go, whoa, wow, it's really great, but you were down for, like, 6 weeks and you haven't looked at that to know how great it really is, or vice versa. I don't know. It's
correct.
A little,
it hasn't
like,
changed.
You have to do a lot of homework. Figure out things a little more to get a bigger picture. That's
right.
All.
So Strange Loop has announced a full cast. It's coming to Broadway. Looking forward to that. Strange Loop is that meta show about the a character named Usher, who is an usher in a movie theater who wants to open up on a Broadway show. And so that's happening. And actually, I should probably bring it up so I can tell you who is the cast? Jacquel Spivey or Spivey. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but it will open in the spring at the Lyceum. It starts previews on April 6th and opens on April 26th. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing that show here in Austin being done as well.
I was like, it's a very, there's a very Austin-like show. There's mm-hmm. another new play workshopping out in La Jolla Playhouse right now that I'm excited about too. So there's a lot of new works right now that I'm excited seeing come to fruition and what happens and journeys. And
yep.
I haven't been excited like that in a while.
So I remember, I don't know when it was, several years ago when Andrew Lloyd Webber had three shows going on Broadway at one time.
Yeah, he tends to do that sometimes.
Yeah, and well, up until last week, Lynn Nottage had three shows going on.
Lynn is everywhere right now. I cannot turn my head without seeing Lynn Nottage, and I'm like, go.
Right. So Clyde's just closed, and that was with I'm going to come up with her name. Ron Cephas Jones, Uzo Aduba.
There you go.
Ron Cephas Jones. And it is, interestingly enough, it was originally called Floyd's. It's about a restaurant that uses formerly incarcerated people. And they changed the name after George Floyd's death to Clyde's. It just closed. And here's the kicker. Here's the bad thing. The last 2 weeks of its run, they streamed it, and I did not see it.
Correct.
And it's supposed to be amazing.
They had. I know. I kicked myself. I had wrong dates in my head, and I was like, boo, Nicole.
So she also had running Intimate Apparel, which is an opera, and MJ the Musical, which, okay, I am so surprised that the buzz on MJ is good.
Oh, people are saying MJ hasn't stopped.
But it did, when they first announced it, and this is to remind folks, this was the Michael Jackson musical that is done by his family that almost died after the Netflix documentary came out. But everybody is saying it's got legs.
Yeah, I thought it would.
No, I didn't.
So,
but that's good. Now there's a couple of other. Articles in the New York, or one specifically in the New York Times that I want to talk about. It's called "Now is the Winter of Broadway's Discontent," written by Michael Paulson, and it's I'm disappointed that we just keep harping on the negative stuff, but it's just talking about how difficult this time is in getting shows done. So one of the things that they figured out how doing is these replacements. So we've learned how deep the bench is for a lot of these things. Here is something I didn't know. You probably knew this because you know everything. Both of the little girls that played Nala in The Lion King? Were out with COVID. And the 10-year-old boy who usually plays Simba went on in their role. So he played...
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did not know that happened, which is interesting. So they were talking about how Broadway, the industry, is figuring out how to cope with all this. But then at the very end of that thing, the other thing is that let the other shoe drop is that audiences are going away.
Mm-hmm.
So there were all tickets, like you could get tickets to anything. And things that like really hard tickets, I don't know if Hamilton is on this, but some other ones that you could not get are on the TKTS booth, the half price booth.
So, yeah.
But
people need to just start writing about the performances that are happening, what's going on, and the excitement in moving forward. This. Time to move forward. It to look at it with the glass half full. That's what I'm trying to say here, people.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, you could take advantage of stuff. The premium tickets for Hamilton were going for just about $200 when they were going for like the lowest priced one would be like $600 or $700. So this would be the time to go see Hamilton on Broadway if you wanted to.
Yeah, I know. There's opportunity around every corner right now to see some amazing stuff that is in a period of her time that you'll be talking about going, you know, I got to take advantage and see all this. These are the stories you get to tell. It's fascinating.
Yep. Okay, and then there's some other stuff that we didn't get time to talk to, and you can find all that stuff at offstageonair.com. I just want to talk briefly locally, which, you know, not a lot is happening locally right now because, you know, we're up in stage five. But I did want to say that, and we've talked about this, Gilbert and Sullivan, Austin has had these fresh takes on Gilbert and Sullivan, of mm-hmm. which I participated in, Ground Floor Theater participated in, along with Deaf Austin Theater. They are now all available on Gilbert and Sullivan's YouTube channel.
Oh, nice.
And I believe you can find a link at gilbertsullivanaustin.org. And then the Street Corner Arts show, Strange But Perfect, which I really enjoyed. I did enjoy seeing it. This is one that's playing at Hyde Park Theater. They had originally, they were selling out every night, and they extended through January into February, and then now they've stopped that. There's no in-person, but they are, you can stream it. You can get it, stream it, and you can find information there. I believe at Street Corner Arts website. I don't know. I'm guessing it's streetcornerarts.org, but I don't know.
And I think it might be.
And finally, the only live performance that I have coming up right now is City Theater is doing a tribute to Sondheim on February 10th at Trinity Street Playhouse. And you can get information.
Keep going.
No, go ahead.
I know one other live performance, but keep going.
You know, oh, okay. You can get information at citytheateraustin.org. And I'm going to guess you're going to say something about Zach?
No.
No, what?
Beth Level is with Austin Cabaret
Theater. Oh, that's true, yes.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's true.
Most recently in The Prom.
Yeah, and of course, Austin Cabaret Theater is run by original Offstage On Air co-host, Mr. Stuart Moulton, which my guess is he's in town. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, Stuart.
Okay, let's take a little break, and we'll listen to a little bit from A Strange Loop. This is called...
Ooh.
This is the song called A Strange Loop.
A Strange Loop? Wow.
I am the story's writer. I'm barely scraping by. I wake up every morning.
We are back. You're listening to Who? Offstage and on the Air on KOOP HD1, HD3 in the Hornsby. So we just have time to introduce our next guest and run away.
All right.
So we spoke to Sharon Anderson, and we've talked a lot on this show about ATX Theater. Remember, folks, if you're going to social media about theater, you should hashtag ATX Theater. But we interviewed Sharon Anderson, went a little bit more in detail about it, and we would like to share that with you guys.
Very exciting.
Yes, I think so. But you know what? I should make sure it's queued up. It's not.
Oh, these are the important things.
These would be the important things. I pushed the button, nothing would have happened. So here it is. Here's that interview. Nicole Shiro, why can't the world just get along? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I mean, if I had that answer, I would have solved the problems a while ago.
People should just get together. That's what I have to say.
Why not?
I think they should. And interestingly enough, right here in the Zoom room, we have a group that has gotten together for the better of a community. And that is, and we've talked about it a lot on this show, ATX Theater. And we have, and I don't know if she's given herself a title yet, but I'm just going to say executive director because every nonprofit needs one, of ATX Theater, Sharon Anderson. Hi, Sharon. Welcome back to Offstage and on the Air.
Hello, Lisa and Nicole. Thank you so much for having me. I don't know if I'm executive director, but we'll find out soon. Maybe I'm volunteerissima. I don't know.
Well, we can discuss offline. I can tell you all about nonprofit stuff and what you should be, because I have opinions. So, you know, we had you and Ann Ciccolella on
little more than a year ago, because ATX Theater started with the two of you bringing this up to try to get. Well, I'll let you tell my audience, our audience.
It's a story.
Yeah. What was the purpose of ATX Theater to begin with?
Well, it began with an argument. No, sort of.
It always does.
My pal Ann and I were having lunch, and she mentioned a conversation she was having with the one and only Mark Serif, beloved theater supporter of Austin, who she asked him, why is Austin Theater kind of stuck where it is? And in your travels in New York, what have you learned that makes you understand Austin Theater better? And he said, Austin doesn't know it's a theater town, which is so true. And Ann and I reflected on a project we worked on about 25 years ago called Austin Theater Week, where we tried to get like a restaurant week thing going in Austin. Mm-hmm. And it was a short-lived attempt. But we had the same kind of feeling, like people just don't know about how much is going on here, and we want them to know. So there needs to be a public awareness campaign about how much theater there is in Austin and the variety, and that there's something for everyone. So that was kind of our first discussion. But then there were follow-up discussions about, you know, you should work with so-and-so because they need this and you need that. And no, I'm not going to, you know, so lots of conversations that made us go, you know, if we all worked together better, if we all collaborated more, things could be easier for theater artists, and we would have a more sustainable, collaborative, and equitable creative sector. So that's one thing we're trying to do. We're trying to get the creatives working together more. And that's such a beautiful thing. It's happening. We're seeing it after 2 years of Zoom meetings. Now, when we see each other in the real world, we hug each other and we're so excited to be together. People are going to see each other's things. People are loaning props. People are offering help in all kinds of ways, which is a beautiful thing to see.
Right. Yeah. This is actually something that I have been talking about since we got here. And it was always very frustrating for me when I first moved here to try to work with other theater companies, and they would like hunker down as if I was trying to do something to harm them. And I, you know, I've always felt that we are not in competition with one another. And it was hard to convince others that. And I think that ATX Theater has done a pretty good job of starting that process. And the theater companies are working very well together these days, I think.
They really are. And I'm not going to say it's just ATX Theater. I mean, Lisa, you operate a venue group of people who own and operate or rent and operate theater spaces, which is also a critical a need in our community to have more theater spaces. But the ones that are there are now talking to each other, thanks to you. And all of us, I think, are kind of having the same realization that we all can do more with the very little we have if right. We work together.
It was real frustrating to me. I remember when SVT lost their theater space, people would come up to me and said, Lisa, that's so good for you. And I would counter. I'd say, no, it's terrible for me. I said, what would be good for me is if three SVTs moved in next door to me. That would be good for me. And that's
true. I've always said it. If one fails, everybody's failed. It's not this one over that one. And it doesn't matter what size. It could be millions and millions and millions and huge and teeny, teeny, teeny with no home. If one fails, we all fail. That's just, it's a group thing to me.
It's a group thing. So ATX Theater started, this germ started coincidentally like a month before the shutdown. So when this group came together, like right during the shutdown, not only was it a chance to talk to theater companies about, of which, how many theater companies are members of ATX Theater right now?
Well, Lisa, there are at least 86 theater companies that we know of in Austin, Texas, which is kind of unbelievable. It's a huge number. Now, a lot of those are teeny tiny companies. Some of them produce one show a year, maybe. And of course, in the last 2 years, everybody's been struggling to produce anything.
True.
However, not all of those people have come to every single meeting, of course. I think at one meeting we had 42, which was super exciting. It kind of felt like hey, we've got half. But there is a core of probably 25 theater companies that do talk together a lot monthly.
Sure, but and again, I don't think it's about attendance of meetings. But what's always impressed me about Austin, I was very surprised when I first moved here in 2004. When I looked at the Austin Circle of Theaters, they had a listing very much like ATX Theater has right now. And I said, oh my God, there's like about 100 theater companies here in Austin. And it's pretty much stayed that for all that time with, you know, there are, as you said, a core, but they come forth. What I like to say is, you know, we have three very strong universities here that produce theater companies or theater students. And, you know, at the end of a year, a group of students get together and say, hey, let's start a company. And they, you know, maybe produce one or two shows. And then many times they fade out. But that happens every year. And so there's a constant movement of theater companies.
It's true. And we're lucky to have all those emerging artists here. And it's fun to watch them come together and go apart. I think our town is ripe for lots of theater company mergers, right? We have people who do amazing sets, but maybe need a little help in one area. And then we have other companies that do amazing in that area. And what a great place to come together, even though ATX Theater is not a physical space. It's just a belief that we are better off communicating better with each other.
It's a conglomeration of theater professionals. And you're opening this up to not only theater companies, but theater professionals as well. Is that correct?
Well, and you know what, Lisa, also audience members. And that's one thing I want to really stress is that we are on our website, which is atxtheater.org. There is a way to join ATX Theater. Not that I'm asking you to do that, but there is a way to do that. And when that happens, there's a weekly calendar that is sent out to audience members. That's my dog.
Well, you know, everybody's a critic. You tell that dog to mind its own business.
Dog is very excited about the calendar.
The calendar.
He's like, I like that calendar. I get it weekly.
The great thing about the calendar, I mean, perhaps not this week because we kind of had to cancel some shows for this Omicron. However, soon, again, the calendar will be hopping. But you still get one email a week if you're a member of ATX Theater, and it tells you everything going on. It also kind of gives you insight into the creative sector that we have, the theatrical creative sector. And it's fun for people who are audience members to know what's coming up because they see the audition listing. You know, that's actually kind of interesting. But we would love to have 10,000 audience members and 1,000 theater members in a couple of years. So that's our hope, that we become the source for all the theater listings in one spot. Because as we talked about this weekend, a lot of publications are going more toward a curated, here's three things to do this weekend listing, which is great. And I'm glad they're doing that. But somewhere there needs to be a place where every show in town is in one spot. So that's ATX Theater.
So you've teamed up with Broadway World with regards to listings, and it's right there on the, like right when you click on atxtheater.org, that's really the first thing you see. Along with lovely pictures of local theater companies' photographs, which is what a picture is.
Right.
In case you didn't know. Now, you have just officially seated your first working board.
We have. I'm so excited about our board of directors. ATXtheater.org/leadership has bios of our esteemed new inaugural board of directors. We have all kinds of interesting people. We have an architect, we have an accountant, we have some incredible theater artists. And we are looking to expand our advisory board as well in several directions. And if people are interested in that, I'm so happy to take them to coffee. So
wonderful. How would they contact you?
My email address is info@atxtheater.org.
And I never knew your name was Info.
It is. Yeah. Info.
It's great. Well, that's awesome.
You have to be in to know that, Lisa.
Now, there's also a subgroup of ATX Theater that specializes and works towards education in the arts.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. The ATX Theater Youngsters is a group of all the Theater for Young Audiences producers in town. And we have gotten together, it was actually about a year and a half ago that we first got that group together. And we're coming up with a plan to make sure that every child in Austin gets to go to the theater before sixth grade. That's our hope. We have a 10-year plan to make that happen. The issue with that is that a lot of the schools in Austin do go see a play every year or have a theater tour a show into their school, but there are some schools that don't. And we made a list of all 168 public schools in Austin, which includes some that are charter schools and some that are from outlying districts, but are physically within Austin. We had to just put the border somewhere. So anyway, we looked at 168 schools. We looked at their scores within Texas Education Agency. We looked at their numbers of students, their teacher-student ratio, their demographics, everything about the school. We tried to learn more about each school. We then went into our histories as theater companies and said, have you been to this school? Have you been to this school? And we color-coded the big long list and made a map of it. And it turns out, wouldn't you know it, if you are an African-American child or a Hispanic child going to a charter school, you are about 70% less likely to have been to the theater in the last 4 years. So
that's got to change.
There is an inequity there, and we're simply not offering our inspiring, exciting shows to everyone equally. So we're going to work on that. In order to do that, we are going to need some sponsors. And so I'm attempting to put together an incredible team to knock on doors and raise some money so we can get every kid in Austin into the theater. And in fact, this week I put a Facebook fundraiser up for my first time. It's my first one. I feel so...
Right, because I believe that today, January 19th, is your birthday.
It is.
And how does it feel to be 28 years old?
You know, I'm really tired of being 28. So I'm going to be 29 this year.
Okay.
Again, and yeah, no, it's great. It's great. I am a happy old lady who grew up here in Austin. And one of the reasons that I spend so much time volunteering for ATX Theater is that I believe that the theater community in this town changed my life, really changed my life. It turned me from a person who was raised to be closed-minded and afraid of differences and to be one thing. And the theater world gave me the option, gave me the imagination to go beyond that, to be a brave, crazy, loving, adventurous person who loves stories. And I believe that stories connect us all. So that's why I do this. And couldn't be happier to be back in my old hometown after 18 years in New York, and really glad to be back and doing something to give back to the community that really made me who I am.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the wonderful things about theater. And that's something that Nicole and I have talked about an awful lot in terms of theater education and how it really expands your mind and really helps you open up to understand that people's differences and humanity's differences are not to be feared, but to be embraced.
Exactly. Exactly. And I strongly believe that the whole point of theater education is not to create more theater makers. The point of theater education is to allow us all to practice stepping into someone else's shoes. It's to allow us to just expand the inner boundaries of who we think we are. So I feel like every kid deserves it.
That's true. So what does ATX Theater look like in 5 years?
Well, now these statements are not board approved now that there's a board. But I will say, I think it would be cool if you thought, you know, I need to go on a date Friday. Let's see, what's the best possible date? Oh, I know, a theater outing is absolutely the best possible date, by the way. Just there's no better thing because it spurs conversation. It lets you get to know the other person based on their response to what it's the best date ever. Anyway, if you want to go on a date, you could click one place and be able to buy theater tickets for any show in town on one website. And that's my hope, that in 5 years we're there.
There you go. I'll expand that hope in that when you ask any citizen of the city of Austin, is there theater? Their answer will be yes, which I think you'd still get that today. But when you ask them to name them, it won't just be one particular theater. It may be a conglomerate of many different theaters.
Wonderful. Yes.
Great.
Well, I hate to tell you, I've already seen that in the last few years. That's something we've been talking for decades. And I now see that. So it's already, that tide's already rolling in.
Don't hate to tell us. That's actually a good thing. Well, I will say before we say goodbye to you, I have just one final thing to say to you, Sharon Anderson.
Lisa.
This is your birthday song. It isn't very long.
Thank you, Lisa.
Sharon Anderson of ATX Theater. Thank you so much for being on the show. And once more, before we log off, just tell people how they can find you.
You can find me at atxtheater.org.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye, Nicole. Great to see you both.
It's the little things you do together, do together, do together, that make perfect relationships. The hobbies you pursue together, savings you accrue together, looks you misconstrue together, that make marriage a joy. Mm-hmm.